Right, guys, I hope you enjoyed having your fish and chip dinner. And if you're still munching away, please continue to do so. I think it's a huge privilege to have tonight's event, and especially during the World Cup. But even more of a privilege, tonight we have an Olympian in our midst, Peter Chambers, Team GB. You know, it was 6 minutes and 3 seconds, I think it was, in 2012, that makes history. And, you know, all the hard work takes much longer than the 6 minutes and three seconds. But we're very fortunate, as I said, we had to have Peter Chambers here. And I'm just going to ask him a few questions and get to know him and just try get inside the head of an Olympian athlete. So, first question we have here is... funny enough, tell us a bit about yourself, so your family life and where you grew up and etc.
Hi there. So I grew up in Northern Ireland. I came over to university at Oxford Brookes, and I've always rode sort of from the age of 13, 14. And yeah, just slowly sort of made my way through the ranks competitions, and then you sort of get slightly better, and you get slightly better, and then you sort of get picked, and that's how it sort of comes about. And I ended up in the senior team of the GB rowing team, and I didn't know how I got there, but I just seemed to get there. And
I think it's very kind of you to be looking at me as though I know what it feels like to get better and better. But
so if I go back to Northern Ireland, I grew up in a Christian family. That's sort of it, really.
Excellent. Now, the most important question, one of the questions we've all been waiting to hear the answer to tonight is, what would your ideal dessert island be? Not desert island, dessert island.
What does that mean?
So if you had a dessert, like ice cream or anything, what would it be?
Well, it's going to be anything with double cream. So or the extra thick double cream that you get. But my favourite food, or my favourite sort of meal that I'll have as a treat, is sweet and sour chicken, Hong Kong style egg fried rice. So and after that we'll have something with maybe like an eaten mess, with like double cream and things like that. So
yeah, we're both very lucky. We can pretty much eat anything and it never stays. But so when you were younger, what did you want to be when you grew up? I mean, was it always rowing, or was it something else?
No, it wasn't. I wanted to be a pilot I still love it, and I love going to Heathrow, and I love traveling, and I love flying, and I love the whole getting on a plane and all that. It's just fascinating for me. And the very odd time we get to fly in the nice seats, and a very odd time, and it's a real pleasure. But yeah, I wanted to be a pilot, and but then they told me, oh, I went to summer, and I realized that I was actually colorblind, so that was sort of went out the window. And then, you sort of, to be honest, by that stage I'd gotten into the rowing, and I never really knew what I wanted to be, but I was always very good with my hands and sort of carpentry and things, or I quite liked the idea of being in the police. And that's what both my parents were. And I think if I wasn't rowing, that's probably what I would be doing.
Cool. Well, we're very happy you're a rower and on the police force. We need more medals than we need people arrested. When did you first hear about God?
To be honest, I grew up in a Christian family, and I would say I suppose you can say you grew into it. I went to all the things at church, all the midweek things. You know, we went to church twice on a Sunday, went to youth fellowship in the evening. And I would say I wouldn't know a specific time of when I became a Christian, but I would have said I was a Christian in my teenage years. But when I look back now, how much was I really following God? And that's something what I've really realised in the last sort of 4 years. Because when I went to uni, I quickly, after my first year, I fell very much away from it, and I sort of had a about a 3-year period of where I really just wasn't interested, 2 to 3 year period where I wasn't interested. I was just living like, I was just pretty much doing what I wanted. Rowing was pretty much everything. I was able to give it everything, and I still am, but it was the be-all and end-all. And actually after London, because this was right up to London, I was sort of, I would say, yes, I am a Christian, but what was it? I wasn't really following God in any way. But I was actually out kayaking with my dad in the, so obviously off the coast of Northern Ireland is the Atlantic, and quite a big swell started coming in, and we were a couple of miles off the coast, and it was getting to a bit where I just wasn't comfortable anymore. And you would go up, so the waves would come, big swell, and you'd be down in the bottom of the wave, and then on the other side of the wave would be my dad. And I soon realised very quickly that if this goes badly, I'm not right with God at the minute. And I very quickly realised I need to sort myself out. And from that sort of day, that was when I actually realised how I needed to live. And from then on, that's where I felt I made a good positive change in my life.
It is amazing how when you get out of your comfort zone, the realism of things kick in. How did you get into rowing?
It was actually... my brother rowed, and he's 5 years older than me, and he started off, and then I just slowly followed in his footsteps, and we've pretty much had very much the same career path of we both rowed at the same sort of competitions, near enough in the same boat class. I was just 5 years later, we went to the same uni, and I always knew I wanted to go to Oxford Brookes because it was the best for rowing, and I knew that if I was going to be any good at this, because at that stage when I was going to uni, Richard, my brother, was in the team, and I knew that's what I wanted to do, that's what I wanted to achieve, and I pretty much was willing to train whatever I could do and pretty much do anything to be in that position. And within 2 years I was on the team, and I was very quick to get into the senior team after doing the under-23 world championships and things like that. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, you obviously work really hard at your rowing, and, you know, how does your faith make a difference in the fact you're a full-time rower?
Yeah.
Sportsman, yeah.
Well, I think, it's not always good, and in sport, and a lot of people, or some athletes will have, their sporting careers will be awesome from the start to the end. But I had a good 4 or 5 years where it's been really, really good. And then last year was a tough year where I was just constantly injured. I had constant back problems, hip problems. And I'm coming out of the other side of that now in a really good position. But you quickly realise that it can't be everything. You get that there's more to this life than just sport or just the sort of living. There must be more to it. And I think, but yeah, within the actual, now when I'm sort of now a normal rower because I'm able to train, do all the same training as everyone else, I think I'm very thankful for that. And I do believe that I've been given a gift to use and to hopefully use well.
Absolutely. I mean, getting a silver medal in Olympics or in just taking part in the Olympics is a huge gift from God. And we realize that, and you've led us down the path that, you know, that life is so much more than pure sports. And, you know, thankfully for me, because I love my sports, but thankfully there's certainly more. Yeah. But tell us about that 6 minutes and 3 seconds in 2012. I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but I'd certainly love to be an Olympian or certainly a top sportsman. But, you know, give us some indication what it was like, going to the Olympics, being a Christian in the Olympics, and, You know, what was it like at the start of that race? You know, just about to set off. What was it like? What was the feeling?
Well, I suppose if I go back to the start of the season, the Olympic season, which is exactly 4 years from now. So I'm in the same position 4 years ago, and I'd won the under 23. I'd won a World Cup in the Olympic boat, and then I'd gone back and done the under 23s and won that, and then gone and won the senior world championships in the all in the same boat class. And I thought if I'm going to do it, it's going to be now. And I'd pretty much set myself up as best as I could because they knew what I could do. And I was just train. And it's brutal. Being selected for the team is excellent, but the people who don't get picked is brutal for. And one of the guys in our boat had been in it for 7 years, and he was kicked out in the last 3 months, and because he just wasn't performing. So you either are good enough or you're not. But yeah, to the Olympics, the whole build up of it is massive. You know, there wasn't massive amount of pressure on our boat because we were the favourite for our event, but there's a lot of big names in the sport, and our names weren't really in that pool, but we were sort of the next level down, but we were still the favourites for our event from the last race. We had won it by the race before we had won the Olympics, we had won by 2.5 seconds, which was about 6 weeks before the Olympics, and that's a massive margin in rowing, and we thought we were going to do it, and we honestly believed it. And but when you're in an Olympic, sort of the team and the experience, like for example the day before the final, we were going down to train and I got so nervous that I threw up in a bush because I saw the tens of thousands of people coming in to watch the racing the day before racing. And like people just do stupid things because you're almost going a bit mad. You know, one of the other guys in our crew walked into a lamppost, and but the race, you're so pumped and you're so full of caffeine, and anything that you can put in your, which is legal, you can put in your body of caffeine or of whatever else, Lucozade alert shots or Red Bull, you're completely on fire for it. And I don't think I could feel it.
You better get the coffee ready for afterwards as well.
Yeah. I didn't feel it like I normally could feel a race because my adrenaline was through the roof. So it wasn't the most painful race I've ever had. I could say that, but that's because you're so pumped for it. And that would be the experience on the start line.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm sure we'd all love to be in that position. But just before we get to our last and almost most important question, people want to know what your favorite movie is and why. And I'm assuming it's not something like Titanic, where you actually have to row, not just do it because you enjoy it.
So my favorite film. Have you ever seen Blades of Glory, the ice skating? It's got Will Ferrell in it.
That's enough for me. I'm certainly going to watch it afterwards.
That's very funny. Anything like that. Cool. So. Or I like all the old ones, like we watched a good one yesterday, I can't even remember what it is. But the ones where they're on like the submarines and things like that, and the like K-19, the Widowmaker, and things like those. Those ones are very good. The Great Escape, that's a good one.
So finish us off tonight. What would you say to somebody who isn't a Christian?
I think definitely, you need to. I just have a sort of really hard look at it. Just take an opportunity to read or to ask someone about it, and sort of think about maybe your own life. And people would ask me about this, and I think, well, do you honestly believe that at the most you get 80 to 90 years. You know, there must be more to it than this. There must be more to it. And that would be my question for someone, and then just go away and have a think and see what you come up with. And I think there's some real great opportunities, just to show many resources and things to read about, and it doesn't need to be all lovey-dovey or anything like that. It's just matter of fact, and go about it that way, and I think that's the best way.
I think that's great advice. You've all joined me giving Peter Chambers, 2012 Olympian, and most of all, one of our brothers in Christ, a huge hand of applause. And thank you very much for coming to talk to us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Sam to come up and give us a short talk. Sam works at Dundonald Church, and he's going to give us a talk tonight from the book of Judges. Thank you.
Well, yeah. No, more generally, actually. Anyway, thank you. Great, and thank you, everybody. Great to be here. I've actually done a little bit of rowing myself, so I was probably one of the few people here tonight who, when they heard the name Peter Chambers, actually didn't need the next bit that always gets said after his name, which is one Olympic silver at London 2012, to know who he was. I was excited that Peter Chambers was here tonight. But as I said, great to be here. Great to be part of the quiz. I've been asked to take a few minutes just to introduce a couple of ideas from the Christian faith. So we'll just have a little think about that before we get back to the quiz. But before we get to that, apparently there's a Rugby World Cup on. I thought it finished a couple of weeks ago, but apparently there's a whole new stage of the tournament now reserved for Southern Hemisphere teams. I didn't know that existed, but apparently it's still going on. And I was looking at statistics from this year's Rugby World Cup, and apparently this year has been the worst Rugby World Cup on record in terms of number of injuries sustained to players. And when you look at the players in the Rugby World Cup, it's unsurprising. They're enormous, and for 80 minutes they're thumping into each other constantly. And some of the collisions that have been taking place apparently have been the force of a car crash. Now, collisions are a pretty routine thing in a game of rugby. But actually, I think people colliding is something that we see all around us in the world. Now, what do I mean by that? Let me explain. I'm not talking about physical collisions. Not like Peter's mate who ran into a lamppost. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about when individuals collide. When personalities collide. A collision of opinions. A collision of nations. A collision of civilizations. Those kind of collisions. So it could be a wife and a husband arguing at home. It could be a disagreement over strategy at work. It could be Labour Party politicians rebelling because they don't like the new direction of the party. It could be European nations clashing in Brussels over how to handle all the migrants who are streaming into the EU. It could be a clash of entire worldviews and belief systems, as is going on in the Middle East, all over the place at the moment. You see, away from sport, away from the rugby field, people are colliding all the time. It's so every day in the world we live in. And I wonder if you've ever paused for a second to think about why that is. Why is it that we live in a world where people are colliding all the time? As Brent said, I'd love to share with you a really short verse from the Bible that I think helps us answer that question, that why do people collide? It says this, it's going to come up on the screen. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. Let me say it again. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. Now, this little short sentence from the Bible comes at the end of a book called Judges, where everyone in Israel, which is the name of a particular ancient group of people, slightly different to the modern state today, they've just all been doing as they see fit. And it's been bad. So in this book called Judges, a man has murdered 70 of his family members. And he, in turn, got murdered himself when a woman dropped a large object on his head. Another man's lover handed him over to be killed in exchange for money. And worst of all, an instance of sexual assault by a crowd leading to a bloody civil war in which 25,000 people were killed. In other words, absolute carnage has been happening in the book of Judges. And the sentence that we looked at, this sentence on the screen, it's the final word on this brutal story. And it has a go at explaining why things have been so messed up. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. You see, the problem, according to the writer, is that everyone's just doing as they see fit. That whatever seems right is right. Whatever people feel is right. It's a kind of morality where I'm at the centre, I'm in the driving seat, and if anybody gets in my way, well, we're going to collide. And we see it all around us. Now, as I mentioned, I've done a little bit of rowing, and I recently joined a new boat club where the standards, to be honest, aren't great. We're not going to be winning Olympic silver anytime soon. If you've never done any rowing before, the idea is that the guy who sits at the front, well, he's basically the guy that kind of sets the pace, and everybody else behind him is meant to follow what the guy at the front does. And that's kind of how the boat moves. But we went out the other day, and let me tell you, we were all over the place. We had one guy kind of whizzing up and kind of going really slowly through the water. Another guy is coming forward really slowly and whizzing through the water. Another guy's like missing half the stroke. And one bloke's got his blade back to front. It's all going wrong. It's a miracle we got back without capsizing. Everyone was doing their own thing at different times. You see, rowing doesn't work when everybody does as they see fit. Is that right, Peter? Rowing doesn't work when everyone just does what they want. Doesn't work. And in the case of rowing, the person you follow is the person at the front of the boat. And actually, the same is true of life. See, when you reject the authority of God, either by openly rejecting him and denying his existence, or by very politely just denying him the right to govern your life, then two things happen. Firstly, you make an enemy of God. And secondly, you lose any universal standard of morality by which we can judge what's right and what's wrong. So we're just left to do as we see fit. And life doesn't work when we're just left to do as we see fit. We know that. We collide. We're left in chaos. We're left in anarchy. We see the effects of that played out on the 10 o'clock news in HD. So what's the solution? Well, let me bring you back again to our little sentence. In those days, Israel had no king. Everyone did as they saw fit. What's the solution? Well, Israel need a king. They need a king. They need a ruler who's going to not reject God, who's going to not just do things as he sees fit, who's going to govern according to God's good standard of morality. But also, it's no good having a king who's good if no one wants to follow his good laws. So somehow, Israel need a king who's going to make the people of Israel want to follow the king's good laws. Now, how on earth is that going to happen? Well, most of the Bible is actually taken up with this search for a good king. Most of the Bible is hunting this king, no. This king, no. Not this king either. Most of the Bible's hunting for a good king. But no human ruler fits the bill. Every human leader who has a go at being king failed because they didn't want to submit to God and his moral framework. They wanted to just do as they saw fit. And also, all the human kings who had a go, they had no way of making the people actually want to follow the laws rather than just doing as they saw fit. And so the chaos just continued and continued. But about 600 years after this was written, a man called Jesus Christ claimed to have authority, the authority of a king. He claimed to be the rightful ruler of God's people. He claimed to be this king. He died with the ironically true sign, King of the Jews, above his head. And when he was alive, this Jesus, he taught people to love their neighbour as themselves. He attacked the religious hypocrites who thought they were better than everybody else and who laid unnecessary rules on people. He welcomed the people who were marginalised because of infectious skin diseases and people whose society considered the lowest of the low. In other words, he ruled really well, in a way that everybody could see was good and fair. Because his teaching was exactly in line with God's moral framework. But Jesus didn't just come to show us how to live well. That wasn't what Jesus was primarily about. He did do that, but he did something far, far greater. You see, remember, a leader to govern well, it was only half the solution we need. We needed a leader to govern well, and we needed a leader who would make the people want to do what's good. And Jesus does that. Jesus makes us want to follow God's laws. He doesn't do it by forcing us. He doesn't do it by guilt-tripping us. He doesn't do it by threatening us with hell if we don't. Instead, Jesus makes us want to follow God's laws by dying for us. The greatest substitution the world has ever seen. Our rebellion against God deserved punishment. And Jesus takes that from us, paying the price in his death. And his goodness and moral rightness deserve life. And he gives that to us, making us acceptable to God. It's an amazing thing that Jesus has done for us. That he would love us to the point of dying for us. It's almost unbelievable, except it really happened. He did. And now he's risen from the dead. And he's gathering to himself people who want to be part of a new world where Jesus is king. And he's going to reign brilliantly. Let me say, that place is going to be amazing. The place where Jesus is in charge is going to be brilliant. A place where people aren't going to collide anymore. Where the anarchy, the chaos, the brokenness we see in our world will be all gone. People living under the authority of the greatest and most loving ruler you could ever imagine. Jesus Christ himself. Just imagine. Oh, it's going to be brilliant. Having followed Jesus for myself most of my life, I can say firsthand, Jesus is a brilliant king. He's a brilliant ruler. His laws are incredibly good. He laid down his life for his people. And so his people love following him. His people want to follow him. Now look, if you know very little about Jesus, or this is the first time you've thought about him in a long time, it's so good you're here tonight. I'm really, really glad that you're here. Because this is a church right here that's committed to helping people work out what does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it mean to live for him, to live with him as king? It's a church that's committed to helping people look at the evidence surrounding Jesus to work out whether anything I've said tonight is true, whether I'm just making up a load of stuff. If actually you want to have a chat with the mate you came with, have a chat. Or come have a chat with me, I'll be sitting at the back afterwards. These things are big. These things are huge. Worth having an opinion on. Here, you can come to church at 10:30 or 4 o'clock. Yeah. Don't leave this here tonight, if that's you. Come and find out more. Come and find out about this King Jesus. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. We're going to get back to the quiz in a few minutes. I think it's going to be tea and coffee. Served in the back. Great. Thanks for listening.